This week on Retronauts.
Letters. We get letters. We get stacks and stacks of letters.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another episode of Retronauts. I am your host for this one, Bob Mackey, and today's subject is listener mail. It's our annual listener mail episode. I do one of these a year, mostly because as much as I would want to include your letters in my regular episodes, there's never enough time. And you know what? Frankly, sometimes Daddy needs a break. Daddy's got two Patreons to feed, and sometimes listener mail takes a little pressure off of Daddy. So let's see who else is here today. Who's across the table from me, as always?
It's Jeremy Parrish, and I'm wondering what my familial relationship is here.
Your
Uncle Jeremy?
There could be two daddies. It's a progressive world we're living in. Right. There was a sitcom about it. It was famous. Who else is here today?
I'm a male listener, Dave Rudden.
And who else is here?
Ashamed to announce he cannot read in the listener mail episode, Chris Antista.
You can't read?
I cannot read.
Well, it's a good thing I'll be doing all the reading in my delicious voice. So yes, it's our listener mail episode. And normally, I've done quite a few of these so far, one a year since we started, I believe. And in the recent years
– I love doing these. No research.
No research required at all. Just whatever's in your – rattling around in your brain. But when I first started doing these, I would do a retro roundup for whatever year it would be because retro roundups were a thing that we would do in Retronauts in the early years. Hey, what's on virtual console this week? But then it turned out that things weren't on virtual console. Yeah, Scorched Earth. Not the game Scorched Earth, but literal Scorched Earth. But this year I decided to do one because a lot of things kind of snuck onto the Wii U virtual console, the 3DS virtual console, some surprising things. So I do want to go over a few of those first and we can all comment on them if we know anything about them or can recommend them. But first I want to point out, big news is coming. The Wii Shop channel will close on January 30th, 2019, and the last day you can add Wii points is March 26, 2018. And I swear to God, everyone in this room must have some like remainder of Wii points. You need to find a way to spend the rest of those before – or add enough to spend the rest of those before March 26th of next year.
That is the graciest grace period I've ever heard in my entire life.
So conveniently enough, if you go to Retronauts.com, I put together a list of 17 games that are more or less unique to Wii Virtual Console that are definitely worth getting. Things like Castlevania Dracula X Rondo of Blood and Super Air Zonk. Games that would cost
Super Air Zonk.
Games that would cost you hundreds of dollars if you bought them for a retro system that have not shown up on any other virtual console type service. They're only on Wii. They didn't come to 3DS, to Wii U, to Switch, whatever. So go to the site and check that out because there's some really great stuff that, you know, it's still worth having your Wii for. And you can play those on Wii U in the Wii emulation mode.
Via the shell.
So they'll continue to carry on with you.
I could never get that done.
That article was a big help because I still have – I have 500 Wii points that they never transferred over to any other system. And it's like I don't know if they will once that time is up.
You can buy
one – I feel like it's illegal that they would.
One NES game?
Yeah, and it's like, which one, though? I've already bought like 30 of them.
Euphoria might be 600, though, because it was an import.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Yeah, like I've had a couple people suggest like Castlevania for TurboGrafx, and it's like, oh, well, that's 600 points. Then I've got to add 500 more points, and then I have 100 points
I forgot that was just 600 points.
Yeah. That's the dilemma.
600 points for that game, that's crazy.
I think I might have like 200 points rattling around in my Wii wallet. I have to just find a scientist to tell me what is the best way to spend that amount by adding a different amount to it.
I'm not putting any more money into that system.
How much have we all spent on this? I swear, Jeremy.
I spent a ton in WiiWare initially. Yeah. And then, I don't know, when I got my Wii U and I couldn't transfer anything over, I'm just more bummed by this whole thing that like the virtual console –
it's going away forever?
I think it's the end of the virtual console.
But I think you can still be able to download the games that you bought for a while.
You don't know that because what happened 2-3 years ago is everything third-party game was on the Wii Shop channel was hosted by GameSpy. When GameSpy went down, everyone just said – I'm not hosting this. We're not going to pay to host this game. It just went away. It did go away.
I don't know if this means you can't download things you've already purchased. I don't know if that's what this entails.
I'm guessing that yes. It says the Wii Shop Channel will shut, will disappear, and you have to go to the Shop Channel to download things.
Oh.
So re-download.
Yes, get some SD cards in that thing and just download everything.
It's a long-ass time to re-download.
Just watch Mario hitting a coin block a lot for that. So yeah, that's just some news. But I did want to get into some of the Wii U virtual console releases. Yes, they're still happening in 2017, and some notable things came out. Like a ton of N64 games came out for the Wii U virtual console. Yes, exactly. They hit when they struck when the iron was right and hot, right in their faces. So let's go over a few of these. Star Fox 64. These are all games I would totally recommend. I only pulled out the ones that are definitely worth playing. Star Fox 64. Yes, fantastic game.
It never gets better than that for Star Fox.
It is the peak of Star Fox. I hope it gets better at some point, but I really doubt it will. Harvest Moon 64. A fantastic Harvest Moon game, kind of what Stardew Valley patterned itself after, if you're interested in seeing the roots of that game. F-Zero X, one of the best F-Zero games. The first time.
Fantastic.
Is that the first time Sega took over for Nintendo, or was it still Nintendo?
The first 60 frame a second, like with randomly generated tracks. This game was awesome.
This game is really cool, yeah. These games are always way too hard for me, but I can respect how fast they are.
Go back. Randomly generated tracks?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like a roguelike.
Yeah, it wasn't all of them, but there were certain modes that would randomly generate tracks.
Yes.
And GX improved on that, but I don't see that ever getting released. I think their soundtrack is too big. But this one was really, really fun.
Interesting.
I feel like it was more synonymous with the series, but there was tracks where you'd kind of race on a snake. You could go on any side of.
Wasn't
like
that
imagine
Battle
racing
Toads?
On a tube.
Not racing on a snake.
Racing against a snake.
Oh, Uniracers.
Yes.
I love F-Zero X.
So that's another recommendation. Another one is something that I need to freaking get around to playing, and that's Ogre Battle 64. The only
I made a
good
joke
RPG.
About that. When that comes out, it's all over, just like 2 days ago. I had no idea it's really coming
it's
out.
It's all Ogre, Chris. It's all Ogre
it's
Battle.
All ogre.
Yes. I don't know.
Nerds.
Has anyone played this game? Because it's weird that the Ogre Battle in the Tactics Ogre series are weird enough, but it's strange that this game ended up where it did on the N64 to an audience that did not even probably want it. I'm sure the two RPG fans who didn't buy a PlayStation were just holding out for one good RPG. Yeah. But
I remember being at working at a Funko Land and that being one of the rare N64 games that you'd pay a dollar for.
You would give somebody actually what the game was worth to them instead of nothing.
And why do you think they dumped all these out?
I don't know. Actually, something interesting, Chris, is that even more surprising than all these N64 games hitting in 2017 is that Konami released 23 TurboGrafx-16 games. 23.
Wow.
In 2017 for
Sounds
the Wii U.
Like it's over.
I think a contract is expiring or something. Because,
I think so.
Yeah. But there's a lot of garbage on this list. There's a lot of mediocre games. Some I would recommend are things I've talked about in the past. Air Zonk and Bonk's Revenge. Go back to our Bonk episode.
I was going to speculate the N64 Mini Classic. That's what this
is. You think so?
Positive. I'm positive. I think that will kill the virtual console. It's not too different from my dad's best of albums.
That's
what we're getting every year. We get a new best of album featuring all our old favorites. And it's worthwhile to license hard-to-find stuff.
You know what? After the SNES Classic, I think anything is possible because I assume Nintendo would never or could never move on past 8-bit nostalgia. But they finally did, God bless them, 10 years too late. But they still did it and they deserve credit
for
that.
And we were talking about an N64 Classic Mini like many other people. But like there's not a lot of dependable first-party Nintendo 64 games. They have to reach out to third-party people.
Mostly
there
rare.
Aren't a lot of dependable third-party.
Yeah, not, but they need everybody they can. So if everybody's dumping their stuff on the virtual console last minute, it's probably because we're now going to be in a little console future. It's like there's little Atari joysticks all over again.
Yeah, we're
going to
finally have if there is a Nintendo 64 Classic. There's no way that you can make the controller smaller than anything.
Yeah, it needs to be big and awful.
Yeah.
The size one console future.
Well, that's I wanted to give some advice to people if they're still somehow excited about the SNES Mini. I hope you got one. Everybody's like, well, just get an emulator. You can say very easily, shut up. Shut up.
Hey, you're talking to me.
Shut up because like when I was a little kid, I was too poor to buy a first-party controller.
Aww.
So the thrill of playing those games on first-party controllers because like I think into the late 90s, I had to play on like little dumb ASCII Pelican crap.
Yeah. So and sorry.
It was awful. And so this is an immaculate first-party recreation of those controllers. Two of them for $80, and they come with 20 games. It's something I never could have gotten myself back.
Well, and also the thing about the Super NES Mini is you take it out of the box and you plug in the electricity and the HDMI, and you turn it on and it works. It's not
exactly.
It's not like an emulation system where you're tinkering and setting up.
Dude,
there's no out of the box solutions.
It's not that hard to emulate.
I was juxtaposing that experience right with doing the Destiny raid, where because of who I chose to be, I physically can't do one part of the raid. My body doesn't work in the game. Hmm. Whereas, here's a bunch of games that released immaculately with no updates that hold up fine. I'm going to play this instead of Destiny.
No, I mean, emulation is not difficult to do. Mm-hmm. But if you want like a simple plug-and-play mm-hmm. emulation solution for your television, this is how you're going to get it.
Totally. But I say plug a PC into your TV and the world is your oyster, like me. I'm living the dream, everybody. I'm in the future.
Sounds like you're not enough of a nerd, because if you have an available Surface to set your laptop.
I'm almost out of Surfaces.
I'm way out of Surfaces.
More TurboGrafx-16 games. So I mentioned Arizona Bonk's Revenge. Bomberman 94, great Bomberman. Yeah. Devil's Crush and Alien Crush, great pinball games.
Wow.
And I'm going to say a big maybe to Newtopia 1 and 2. I've never gotten around to playing those games. They are the Zelda clones for the TG16. Anyone in this room, have you played these games? I think I bought Newtopia 1 on Wii Virtual Console.
Yeah. Is that the one that has like – it could be six players, or am I thinking – about something.
You're thinking of something else.
Yeah.
There's a Zelda clone.
Like double dungeons
something like that.
Probably about the Destiny raid.
This is even more of an explicit Zelda clone in that you are a total Link-style dude.
You play a character named Clink.
Clink, yes. And the screen scrolls as it does in Zelda. You know, you move to the side of the screen, everything kind of shifts over. So 3DS Virtual Console. We're recording this on October 1st, 2017. This could change, but it won't. The only 3DS Virtual Console release for this year on the 3DS is Pokemon Gold and Silver. And I would say I would recommend these. These are the last Pokemon games I played through all the way. They also have the entire first game, the first game's map snuck into it thanks to Satoru Iwata. He did that himself with his masterful programming skills. So yeah, that is basically the one Game Boy release on 3DS Virtual Console this year.
That's it?
That's crazy. I checked and I was like, that really is it. So
it's over then.
Yep, yep. They're closing
the
doors.
It's weird because 3DS is the platform that Nintendo is still supporting. Like, it's still an active going concern for them, and they don't seem in any hurry to let it die.
No.
Whereas the Wii U is you know, it's beyond dead. Like, you can smell the steam coming off of it.
It's funerals long ago.
Yeah, and yet somehow that's getting the virtual console releases, and
I don't know how your behavior is, but in terms of new games, the Switch has replaced the 3DS in my life. It comes with me wherever I go. I play it in bed. I play it on airplanes.
I did have to like remove a good cake of dust off of my 3DS for Samus Returns.
For me, there's too many good 3DS games still coming out, and I wish they would just be Switch games so I could cut the tie completely. But it's like, no, I still have like five 3DS games I need to finish, and there's still more that are coming out. And I think maybe by 2019 I will be living a 3DS-free lifestyle. But I also have like thousands of dollars worth of digital software on that thing too, so I can't get rid of it. But yes, everything should be on the Switch. I think it's established by all of society that everything that ever could exist should be on the Switch.
Although I will say that I have felt that way for a long time, but now that I'm playing Etrian Odyssey 5, I'm like, you know what? There's still some experiences unique to dual screen systems that just wouldn't be the same on Switch.
You know what?
I would like for the 3DS to have a successor.
I was playing the Wii U version of the Wind Waker for a podcast, and I'm like, oh, I like this dual screen, you know, menu system. It actually removes the need to actually go to a menu screen. So yeah, you can't do that with a Switch. So maybe not everything.
Do we know that you can't do that with a Switch? It doesn't seem like they bother to do that with anything.
I mean, you only have one screen on a Switch.
Yeah,
right?
you can't do dual screen gaming because to play it on a TV, you have to dock it. Sure. Yeah, the screen.
It works as a touchscreen.
Yeah, there are games that are handheld unit only, like because they are touch based.
Yeah.
But there are no games – like it's not physically possible to have a dual screen.
Yeah. It would be cool, but that can't happen.
There are also some games that play – you can play vertically, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they really need to release a vertical
sort of standee.
Yeah.
The Namco Museum, I think you can do that.
A lot of the hamster games, the arcade archives, like – Strikers 1945.
Are they the ones doing all the Neo Geo ones?
Yeah, they're doing Neo Geo and so also the Nintendo 76. Arcade. I really hope that Punch-Out has a vertical mode because if it doesn't, it's going to be – I already complained.
That's like playing a DS game on the Wii U, which is awful. There's no comfortable way to do it. You can either play with like two tiny screens on your Wii U gamepad or just not play it at all.
Yeah. You should try playing with the double screen approach. Mm-hmm. Play Yoshi's Island DS that way where the two screens are connected.
I tried doing that. Like I have to hold it. Yeah. You have to hold it in this very special way.
It's ridiculous.
You might be able to do that.
It's very hard to do if you don't want
it's
to do
dumb.
It.
Dumb. Yes. You don't want to do that.
You can suspend your Wii U gamepad from the sky, maybe.
I'm trying to think. Maybe I can make a peripheral.
It's far too late for that, Chris. So, talking about Nintendo's...
Yeah, Wii U peripherals. That's a
no,
boom
not Wii U.
That's a boom market right now.
Yeah. And it's Switch.
So, for the Switch, now we're talking about the Switch, the one virtual console game. It's not even a virtual console thing, but it's the version of Mario Brothers for the arcade. It's fine.
So stupid and weirdly incredible at the same time.
I mean, I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth this one, but I feel like they spent like a decade giving this game away for free 8 times. Yeah. Yes, it was not the original arcade Mario Brothers, but in every Mario game for the Game Boy Advance, they would just give you Mario Brothers. Even in the first Mario RPG game for the Game Boy Advance,
they're
like, just have Mario Brothers. It's fine.
And and how often do you whip out your Game Boy Advance games to play Mario Brothers?
Every day. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, no, this is
well,
fine.
Well, you're the one person who does.
Was that the arcade version though?
No, it was an upgraded version of the NES version.
But I don't know the story behind this, just weird urban legends like Nintendo's been the most unkind to its arcade generation.
Right, and that's what makes, to me, this arcade archive thing amazing.
Yeah.
It's really kind of strange that in order to have Nintendo arcade games, you have to get them through a third-party publisher.
Yeah.
But, hey, they are actually doing it, which is a change of pace from the past 20 years of Nintendo history.
What I had heard is that they had some dispute over the boards that some other company needed to
pay. Like we've talked about that on Retro before.
Is that what's going
there was
on?
There was a contractor, Ikegami Tsushinki, who did the programming work on their early games like Space Firebird, Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong Jr. was done by Nintendo, but it was adapted from Ikegami's work. They did Popeye. Basically, everything prior to Mario Brothers was done by Ikegami. And rights were very fluid back then. Like the exact rights of digital code had not been nailed down. So Ikegami was like, we own the code to this. We created it. So it's ours. Nintendo was like, well, we created the concepts and the artwork and you guys just did contract work for us. So we own it. Sorry. So that was in the courts for like 10 years almost.
Until finally
there was a ruling that basically came down inside saying no code is copyrightable. And at that point it was like, oh, Ikegami won. So Nintendo settled out of court. There's no word on what the actual resolution was, but I'm guessing that the resolution was that Ikegami owns it and Nintendo's just not going to give them the satisfaction of licensing anything that they worked on. So I don't think we'll ever see Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong Jr., definitely not Popeye.
That's crazy.
Sky Skipper, like all those.
Not Sky Skipper.
I would love to see Sky Skipper just because
I've
never played
Sky Skipper. It's pretty
cute. It doesn't look like a good game.
No, it's not.
But it's like Miyamoto sprite art. You know, it's that high resolution style that Popeye had. So yeah. I'm all into that. But I think it's great that Nintendo is finally getting these arcade originals out. Mario Brothers, the arcade version, is the best version of the game, and it's never been publicly available outside of arcade.
Yeah, that
before.
Is the cool thing. I mean, I would rather see them launch with a huge virtual console selection, but giving us a game we could not have gotten before outside of emulation is pretty cool. And did they have some sort of arcade initiative on the Wii? I vaguely remember
they
there
did,
being
and
something
none of
like
them
that.
Were Nintendo games.
Oh,
there was virtual console arcade that Satoru Iwata announced at a keynote speech in 2010. At Game Developers Conference, I was right there watching it. I was like, finally, they're going to give us Donkey Kong. And no, it was Tecmo games and Konami games and Capcom games.
And not very
and
many
basically
of them.
Just it happened.
At least in America.
It happened for like 3 months and then they dropped it and never revisited it again.
Well, I think this sad reality, and I was talking to somebody about it, that virtual console sales really tapered off. And I don't – We were talking about that on 302010, I believe, that the Wii had the weird – it launched like days before the iPhone. When the iPhone – that in like –
The Wii?
Or the Wii, yeah, like a couple weeks.
No.
Was it around the announcement?
iPhone was 2007.
Seven.
Yeah, Wii's,
Nintendo Wii
yeah.
was November 2006.
So when the iPhone – like the, I guess Microsoft's a better example because they had that like whole arcade room. Like you'll be able to buy Centipede for $5.50. And then the iPhone came out and like every game's 99 cents or free.
Yes.
And that whole thing cratered.
The iPhone App Store didn't launch until 2009. Until that point, everything had to be done in HTML5. Everything
is that
like if you had an app on iPhone for the first 2 years, it was done through the web browser.
Well, I know that Microsoft Game Room was launched post iPhone game boom. I remember that being just a huge
disaster. Came along later.
I think when the Wii U virtual console came out, they were asking $8 to $10 for games that were shorter than experiences you could get free on every other device you owned. and that's – it's not that these were bad games. It's not that there's not an audience for digitally available virtual console games. Their pricing was awful.
Yeah, but they had 2 years on the market before iPhone gaming became a real thing, because I was covering iPhone games when they first started.
But remember, the games on WiiWare didn't come out immediately. Like that.
Oh, no. WiiWare was later, but Virtual Console was there at launch. Virtual console, they had like 25 games on launch.
And that's when I paid for all of them and reviewed them. All my money, but like I did not fall for that with Wii U. Like
The pricing was not competitive enough, and they also – it was oddly hidden, that the feature, the ability to play old games, you had to sort of dig for it. It was not as obvious as it should have been to people who bought it for Wii Sports and probably would have wanted to play Mario.
There are executives right now who are baffled over the SNES Classic selling so well when the virtual console did so bad. So,
I mean, I think on the Wii U menu, when you go into the Wii U eShop you scroll down and virtual console, like half the time I see it, it's like an image of Toon Link or something where it's like That's anachronistic right there. It's like I don't think of old games when I see that version of Link that you put there.
Yeah, it's not communicated very well. Yeah. So moving on from the Switch, I pulled out a few things for the PS4. Oh. Basically, the up-res Steam version of Final Fantasy IX is on PS4. Play this version. It's great. You can speed up a lot of the battle loading times that were a problem in this game. And they made it look as good as it possibly could look. And it's a great game. It's the creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi's favorite Final Fantasy.
Yeah. It has the same cool features that the Final Fantasy VII release had, where you can turn off random battles. You can
achievements, right?
I think so.
Sweet chivos.
I'm pretty sure. Oh no, there are because trophies. Because one of them was to skip rope 1,000 times.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. For all you masochists out there, if you want to get that platinum, get ready for that kind of fun.
It came with a great dynamic theme that I saw on your PS4.
I half bought it for that, and half because it was $5 off the first week.
Okay, now I have to buy dynamic themes. I'm all about that.
It's the classiest thing I've seen in a while, as far as dynamic themes.
Does it play the song that plays when you turn on the game?
No, you just get like the tweet tweet.
As you scroll around through the menu.
Interesting. So other PS4 releases, retro releases, there's a lot of them. A lot of them aren't very good. I picked out a few that could be good. Maybe you're interested in them at home. It's Code Veronica X. I think Code Veronica has aged very badly. Yeah, even the guy online I know whose name is CVX Freak. I think he's changed it since then. Alex.
Alex O'Neill. Yeah,
he's now CVS Freak.
Yeah, and Resident Evil Revelations 2 Freak.
Some cheap prescriptions.
I think even the guy who named himself after Code Veronica has kind of changed his mind. So you're welcome to like it. You're welcome to enjoy it. I recommend going back to it and seeing how it's aged. I think out of all the Resident Evil games,
there was a PS4 sale at the GameStop yesterday, and I looked at. There are 6 Resident Evil games on PS4.
I think you can get the entire series. On
I can imagine,
yeah, yeah. Like in a box. So like. Just wait. It'll probably be available.
Yeah. And anyways, this is sort of the bastard Resident Evil was outsourced to, which can explain a lot of the problems with it.
So
it is weird. And Star Ocean 3 is all right, I guess. It's got a really bad plot twist. I feel like Star Ocean has really gone downhill since the second game. And the most recent one is okay. But 3 I had a lot of problems with. It has one of the worst plot twists in a game. I guess skip ahead.
The statute of limitations.
It is in an ocean.
That's right. There's no ocean. Oh, my God.
They're not even really stars. They're burning balls of gas in space.
I think we spoiled this on Retronauts before, but please skip ahead like a minute. This twist is everything you've done up to the point in the game where you discover this, which is like 30 hours, you discover the world you're in is actually an MMO.
No.
And you escape the MMO to do things in the actual real world. And your characters have no problem with their entire life being alive to that point. It really upset me, and I think I stopped playing it after that. So that's Star Ocean 3. You can enjoy it. I do not. I spent good money for that game, and I bought the damn guide too because you need it. Other stuff I want to mention that aren't retro releases, but they are retro related. I want to bring up one game at least, Golf Story. For the Switch, I don't know if it's going anywhere else, but if you miss the RPG elements of the Mario Golf games from the Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance versions of those, get this game. It's basically what Stardew Valley is to Harvest Moon. It's people picking up where the developers left off a decade ago.
So Golf Story is not developed by Camelot?
No. Okay. No, it is not developed by Camelot. Camelot actually – I don't know what Camelot is doing since they made that Golden Sun game for – was it 3DS?
I hope they're performing penitence.
Yeah.
It was DS.
I don't like the
one
Golden
DS.
Sun series.
Were they not one of the developers that was put on a lot of those 3DS Street Pass games? Maybe not.
They could have been.
I don't think so.
Yeah. The last game I think I remember, they did Mario Golf in like 2012 or 2013 or 2014.
Toadstool?
Did they do the most recent Mario Tennis?
They probably did that. Okay. Yeah.
Because that was last year or 2 years ago.
But I have that dumb story of like I went to a Wendy's, win a Nintendo game, just sent in my code and forgot all about it. And I think like I come back to my house one day and I'm like fired. I got fired and I open my mailbox and this is like pre-Amazon, like pre-opening games on Amazon. I just open. They didn't notify me. It's like here's a battered copy of Mario Golf for GBA.
The mailman played it for about 20 hours.
And I was like, what is it? I don't want to play a golf game. I hate golf and people who play it. And I pop it in and just like, this is amazing. This is one of the – I love that game so much.
I mean, I have no love for golf, playing it, watching it, or the people who play it, like you, Chris.
It's a giant waste of space.
I love video golf, especially when you wrap an RPG around it with experience points and equipment and characters and stat growth, and Golf Story is all that stuff.
And then I played up until the recent 3DS Mario Golf. I still love that series because
The golfing is still good. I just wish they would incorporate more of the stuff around
stat
it.
Stat stuff.
Yeah, that was really fun. One other thing I want Jeremy to talk about because he hates it and he wants the developers to all lose their jobs. I'm kidding, of course. That's Samus Returns. Jeremy, you have some mixed feelings about that. I'd like you to talk about them here. I'm putting you on the spot. I've only played a bit of it. I can see where your thoughts are and I can see why you would think that. I don't know if I agree with you yet, but I want you to talk about this game and how it makes you feel.
I mean, I really enjoyed it at first. It's a really nice looking reinvention of Metroid 2 that brings the mechanics up more to snuff with Metroid Fusion, and it's very action-oriented. I'm not crazy about the fact that so much of combat is based around enemies that have these aggressive attack actions.
Yeah.
It's almost like a rhythm game.
There's a parry to it, a parry system. But it's not like a real, like Bayonetta-style melee combat system. Samus has one melee action, which is basically an instant QTE when an enemy starts to attack. And once it starts to lunge at you, you swat it and stun it, and then you can kill it in a single hit.
They should have went full platinum and had a slow motion happen after that. That would have been
cool.
Yeah,
that would make it even better.
It doesn't bother me as much as it bothered you, but I haven't played enough of it.
The thing is, it really starts to wear on you when you get further into the game and you want to start exploring more and backtracking, and you have to do those stupid QTE actions every time you see an enemy. I mean, you can avoid enemies.
Because you can't shoot them. Without making them vulnerable with a parry.
Yeah,
right?
Even when you become more powerful, it still takes quite a bit of damage
to
destroy an enemy.
You have to daze them first.
Yeah. So you really find yourself being forced to do that, and it really breaks up the flow. But what really bothers me about the game is that the design of the world has been made really, really monotonous. It's super dense, and like they've turned the whole thing into a very convoluted puzzle platforming, find your way around, use your powers to get through this, which is very Metroid. But the thing about Metroid is that the real Metroid games have sort of an ebb and flow to that. You have moments of like you go to a room and it's an intense puzzle and you have to spend some time figuring it out. But then you go to the next area, it's like open and you kind of get a breather. This game doesn't ever give you a breather. It's always puzzle. It's always navigating through twisty, sinuous tunnels. It needs a little extra touch to make it stand up with the classic Metroids.
Would you say
good. It's very well made.
It's more playable than Metroid 2 Game Boy then?
Yeah, I mean, sure. But I mean, that game
most
has
things are.
It's like it traded one set of problems for a different set of problems. Yeah. This one is very, very tedious and toilsome.
I watched a great video.
It's kind of frustrating.
I'll link to this video in the notes for this episode on the blog. But I watched a great video today from the YouTube channel, The Game Maker's Toolkit, I believe it's called. Mm-hmm. And he basically compared how another Metroid 2 remake and Samus Returns both interpreted the original game. And they both get some things wrong and they both do interesting things with the original design. So I guess there's no 100% pure way to play this game, but I would check out both versions if you have time. Yes, AM2R. Did I say that right? AM2R. Yeah. People say, oh, Nintendo cease and desisted that. It's on the internet forever. They can never get rid of
Nintendo
it.
Nintendo waited
find
until it had been released to CND it, which to me says they had 10 years to kill it.
Yeah.
They could have killed it at any point. They waited until it was out and in distribution.
And that was one of like 14 Metroid 2 remake projects too.
I think they forgot and then like – they remembered, we're making the same thing. Why do we let this happen?
I really think they had to take, the necessary steps to protect the integrity of their copyrights and intellectual properties, but they didn't want to like actually crush the creator of the game send all of his work to be for nothing. So they let the game come out. I think they waited until after the game had launched and then they killed it. So then people, you know, it would be trickled out and would pass around.
It's the second time I'm on record for yelling at Nintendo, like, if you're not dealing with this property or doing anything with it, leave it alone. Why did you do this? And then, Samus Returns. I didn't – that's the piece of the puzzle.
What was the first one?
Someone had archived Nintendo powers. Literally doing nothing with this. Don't punish this dude. And then like a month later, volumes of Nintendo Power are announced for sale somewhere. I forget where that was.
Oh, really?
I had no idea.
I didn't know they're selling Nintendo Power.
I thought there was like some book collection or some hardback volume that was selling Nintendo art that had somehow incorporated it.
I had no idea about this. So we're going to take a quick break and then we'll move on to listener mail.
The Serial Killer Podcast, hosted by me, Thomas Vyborg Thune, is the podcast dedicated to serial killers, who they were, what they did, and how. Join me as I sit down bi-weekly to bring you, dear listener, into the dark land of serial murder and psychopathy. The show goes into graphic detail on the most infamous and lesser-known serial killers from around the world, with each episode covering one unique serial killer. So far, the show has covered serial killer superstars, such as BTK, Jeffrey Dahmer, and the Yorkshire Ripper, and lesser-known killers, such as Elias Abuelazan and Anatoly Onoprienko. Be advised, this show is not for children, as it takes you deep into the twisted world of ultimate evil. You can find me exclusively at podcastone.com or on the new Podcast One app. Also, don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts.
When it's time to buy a car, it's only natural to have 1,000 questions. How much should I pay? Which model is right for me? Will being the color red make my car go faster? Are there any talking cars that aren't sarcastic? How will my new car fit into God's plan? Which cars perform well in a Mad Max scenario? Can I still get me some of those groovy wood panels? And so on. So if you're in the market for a new ride, consider turning to TrueCar. With TrueCar, you can see what other people in your local market paid for the car you want. Information that empowers you to feel confident. Once you register with TrueCar, you can connect with a certified local dealer and see real pricing on actual inventory. And with over 13,000 certified TrueCar dealers nationwide and over 3 million cars sold by TrueCar dealers, you can rest assured that TrueCar has a history of happy customers. Customers who, on average, save $3,000 off the MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
Great issues plus 6 free strategy guides on a hot new game. That's twice the power for still $15. Wow, call now.
And caller number 9 for $1 million. Rita, complete this quote. Life is like a box of
chocolates.
Rita, you're cutting out. We need your answer.
Life is like a box of chocolates.
Oh, sorry. That's not what we were looking for. On to caller number 10.
Bad network got you glitched out of luck? Switch to Boost Mobile, super reliable, super fast nationwide network, and get 4 lines, each with unlimited gigs for just $100 a month. Plus, get 4 free phones. Boost makes it easy to switch. Switching makes it easy to save.
So we're back, and I want to jump right into another question. And this one comes from Daniel Primed, and he says, as new generations enter the gaming community, many younger players have taken an interest in games before their time. These players approach retro games outside of the cultural context of the times in which the games were created, and therefore bring different perspectives to the games that many of us older players grew up with. What do you think these newer players offer to the niche of retro gaming, and how have they changed your understanding of the games of your generation? I think, Jeremy, you have a lot of young relatives that play games with you and stuff. Can you talk about like what they're their reaction to retro games is if they play any of those?
So for the most part, the kids in my family, they range from like age – the ones that game from like age 7 to age 15, 16. The older ones mostly just want to play current games. Like there's a 12-year-old I think or 11 who just wants to play Destiny and Halo. They all like Pokemon. Hmm. They all like Minecraft or Terraria. The only one of my nephews who really likes retro games is the youngest one, who's 7. And he's drawn to them because he loves, obsesses over Minecraft.
I've heard that.
And he sees Pixel Mario. Like I have the Pixel Mario amiibo and the Pixel Link amiibo. And he's like, oh, Minecraft. Yep. So now he sees these games as like the precursors to Minecraft because everything's blocky.
That is great.
We sat down one time and he wanted to build a Minecraft recreation of the Pixel Link amiibo. So we sat down and spent a couple of hours building a Pixel Link. But whenever he comes over, he either wants to play Minecraft on my Wii U. That's like the only thing that happens with my Wii U anymore. he plays Minecraft on it.
I think Brett had a story. He was wearing a Mega Man shirt walking down the street and just a little kid just points at it and yells, Minecraft.
Or he wants to go down to the office and play Duck Hunt. And then when he gets bored of playing Duck Hunt, because it's simple. You point at the screen and shoot and ducks die. And when he's done playing Duck Hunt, he just wants to like cycle through all my ROMs. And he's gotten old enough that he reads now. So he just like looks for interesting names and
Bubble
starts
Bath Babes. What is this?
No. I skip past those.
I see.
But he's like, Mystery Quest, that sounds really interesting. It's not actually a good game.
Not really,
but
no.
I was like, I've never played Mystery Quest. So we're experiencing this together for the first time. So that's great. But yeah, I don't know what he necessarily brings to retro gaming, if that's the question.
Yeah.
But I think it's great that, you know, there is this touchstone in Minecraft that causes people, you know, younger kids to say like, oh, I see the, you know, the connection there. I see the DNA in a way that older people wouldn't necessarily see because we saw games evolve from 8 to 16 to 32-bit to, you know, HD.
Mm-hmm.
So he sees, you know, just the direct – like the shortcut, the point A to point
Z. If you spend a ton of time in Minecraft, people build shrines to all these 8-bit game characters,
which makes kids want
to get interested in this. Who is that?
He watches Minecraft live, you know, like Let's Players on YouTube all the time. So I don't know what he sees. Hopefully nothing horrible.
But, a lot of swastikas.
But yeah, that's like – that's a real strong connection and I feel like – he's going to grow up liking and appreciating these older games without necessarily realizing it.
I do worry if – I wouldn't say worry, but I wonder if younger gamers, if they'll have any sort of nostalgia or want to look back at like the PlayStation and 64 sort of Saturn period. But like before dual analog controllers came around and made that sort of – accessible. Like I think you could put some PS2 games in the hands of like a kid today who plays Destiny and Halo and like, oh, you'd understand this. But for the PlayStation 1 especially, it's like, well, a lot of these games have control schemes that are way outdated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like every game had to reinvent 3D movement.
Yeah.
You love Destiny. You're going to love Codename Tenga.
Oh, yes. Boy.
that's why opening up the SNES Classic Mini, those aren't games I've been capable of revisiting that often. But like – These controls are real tight. You understand this in a second.
Yeah. The one game that holds up worst is the one game that tries to be 3D.
The Kirby?
Star Fox.
Yes.
Kirby Course. What's that game called?
Kirby Dream Course.
Oh,
that game is awesome.
Yeah.
That game is awesome.
I've never played it before.
You played it for 5 minutes on a stream.
You have no idea what you're talking about. But Star Fox 2 has that like 3D control system that Mega Man Legends did where you like turn with the analog or the shoulder
pre-analog stick.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. Like – it's That's really what amazing missing. What they were doing with the tech there, but I'm kind of glad Nintendo waited till Star Fox 64.
Yeah. It was a good idea.
As from viewing Game Rars from as long as I have in Beeswax and otherwise, I'm also a big film nerd, and I know a ton of big film nerds, and none of them would go back even two generations in film, let alone three, four. But I see most people who enter in the gaming landscape – working on a project like DuckTales is a good example of that because that's not only held aloft by a great game. There's – people who get into video game music discover DuckTales even if they're 20. Like they'll go to that game and like DuckTales is an astonishing – it is left an astonishing footprint on multiple generations in a way I don't think I've seen a lot of films do as a result of that. So I think it'll be really interesting. I think a real fan of games will go back way further into a medium's catalog than fans of movies and books I think I don't know. They all hold up pretty okay.
I don't know. There's only so far you can go back in games versus books, where you can go back to like the 15th century.
You can, but like having tried to read like raw Shakespeare, I'm like, this isn't really possible to enjoy. Like, I need annotations.
I've read Chaucer.
I was gonna say that
I didn't enjoy it, but I've read it.
The Canterbury Tales is like tennis for two of literature. Yeah. Let's move on. That was too smart of a comment. So Fight Club says, I feel like Retronauts is the only place I can ask without hearing keyboard and mouse shouted at me. I'll do it, Fight Club. So I'll ask you, what is the greatest controller of all time? It's okay if you believe it is a keyboard and mouse. I will say, every time there is a new DualShock, I'm like, this is the best controller ever. And they keep making it better. So I think my greatest controller of all time is the DualShock 4. I just love how it feels in my hand.
Pro DualShock 4 is different.
It's even better?
The grips are better. It has a light window for – like if – you know how there's a different light on your
– Yeah.
You – as a player, you never see that because it's facing away from you.
They it's there to put a distracting light on the TV when you're playing a game.
So now you can see it. It's better in every way.
Interesting. Anyone else? Jeremy, do you have a favorite controller? Or what would you say objectively, make a pronouncement from the mountains, the greatest controller of all time?
Objectively?
Yes. Use science and math to figure it out.
I know mine.
Ergonomics.
I mean, I
– U-Force.
If 3D is not a consideration, 3D gaming – then the Super NES controller.
It's very comfortable.
It just feels great.
Especially
very
with
responsive
with the divots and the X and Y. I like that a lot.
Very comfy. Like that's the one way the American Super NES was superior. Those divots, those were great. But yeah, like the DualShock line has always been great.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hard to top that.
Yeah,
I have a bizarre affection for the Saturn controller.
I was going to say that too.
Because I've always had a tough time with multi finger claw grip of two buttons at the top of a controller, but I had a great time putting the middle of my thumb on that B button and hitting everything with ease. Other than fighting games, I really like the Saturn controller.
Well, I think the Saturn controller, like when Street Fighter 4 came out way back when on Xbox 360 and PS4, they had these
– the fight pad.
The fight pads, which are literally Saturn controllers. I mean very close to Saturn controllers with all six buttons right in the front.
Yeah.
Well, when we were playing Super or Street Fighter 2 Turbo on the SNES Classic, I forgot for a second like, oh yeah, they put Fierce and Roundhouse – on the L and R, and it's like that's not – it just didn't work for me. And like during the Saturn era when there were still, you know, fighting games were plentiful, it was like, oh, well, this works better than the others.
Yeah, I forget. I've played Tomb Raider on many systems, the old school one, and I have Saturn as the best control scheme. I'll stand by
it. That is quite an accolade for Tomb Raider, the Saturn version. Worst controller – he didn't ask this, but I want to answer this around the table here. I will say Sega Dreamcast. I hate that controller with a passion. I'm talking about the cord coming out of the wrong side of the controller and the way you hold it. It's like two 90-degree angles instead of just being spread outward like you would naturally hold your wrist. It's just like you have to be locked into that thing.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Worst controller. Something you actually use.
There's some really bad controllers.
I mean, you could say
history.
In television, but you've never played
just,
in television.
This is great.
You
we
have?
Just mentioned it.
I'm sorry, Jeremy.
Just praised it. PSP.
PSP?
PSP is the worst controller. It hurts. It hurts to play.
It can be pretty bad.
Ask a Monster Hunter player what the claw grip is. It's something that you physically can't play the game anymore because of how hard it is.
Claw glip.
Yes, horrific boss. What's the controller that's like a phone? Is that a television or am I thinking of
the N-Gage?
I mean the.
It looks like a phone. It's like got a dial on it, a bunch of buttons.
Yeah,
on
it's
it.
In television. Okay. And ColecoVision was similar, but it had a stick. Yeah.
Those are all terrible.
Yeah.
Dave, did you have a worse controller, or do you agree with the Dreamcast?
Yeah. I mean, as much as I played it, it was like I mean, I like the VMU. Part of it, but that was about it. And even those, it was like
– it also screams at you when you turn it on.
Yeah,
it's like, give me batteries.
Yeah. And for some reason, like, why is this still running off of my watch batteries when I turn the console off 10 minutes
ago? I think
it's
borrowing from the power of the console or something like that.
So no one's going to go after the Duke?
The Duke. Why did they call it that? I never
understood
that.
It was like the name of one of the developer's sons.
Oh, okay.
Did you see that?
Apparently he had like
a
megalomorphic
son.
Was it a large son?
There's enough affection for it now. It's making a comeback. Yep. And there's going to be a Xbox One edition of the Duke because I believe if you're younger and you're an Xbox player from birth, you deserve your Rob the Robot.
Yes.
I just remember the Duke controller working really well for Halo.
Mm. Like, it did, yeah.
And then like playing any other I can't even remember any other original Xbox launch games like Star Wars Obi-Wan or
Brutal
something like that. Like,
Force or something?
Yeah.
Or,
like they were just
Brute Force. Sorry.
Sneakers.
Yeah. They did not work well with the Duke and like when the Xbox One – what they call it? The Controller S or something? I forget what they actually call it.
It was
maybe
S.
Yeah.
They better keep the black and white buttons, the most essential buttons on any controller. I have no idea.
And I want to give a shout out to the Xbox 360 controller because it was really good. It just every time I pick one up now, I feel old and it's sticky for some reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was a good, a sturdy. All of them still work. That's what I play everything on Steam with.
Did 360 you, did you buy Galgun?
Galgun, what?
You don't want to buy. You don't want to buy.
I think lost in the shuffle of how like big a glob the Duke controller is. It was the black and white buttons, which were like what the tiniest bean shaped thing. Like it's like a, just slightly bigger than a sesame seed. I remember them being. And yeah, like, these are supposed to do important things.
I feel like the designer was like, these buttons look rather sharp here.
Yeah. If there's anything I dislike about the PlayStation 4 controller, it's the options and share buttons.
Yeah, those are terrible.
Which
yeah.
are just these tiny little things at the top that I've. I mean, they never really do anything important, but it sucks that
– I want options to be start as God intended. Yeah. Enough of this options crap. So next letter is from the 16643 who says, is there anything stopping an imitation console that plays old CD games like Sega CD, PS1, 3DO, et cetera? Is there something with the emulation or the hardware that would stop it, or is it lack of demand?
I mean,
there's nothing there that would stop it from happening. I mean, I played I've been playing PS1 games on my like Nexus tablet. They're just all – you don't necessarily need a CD with that data on it. Just – I guess it's – does Sony want to do that? Does Sega want to do that? I don't know. What does everyone else think? Dave seems to have an idea.
I mean just the PlayStation 1 emulation, it's such a gambit. I mean when you're talking about like the most popular games, they'll likely work. But we do a lot of streams of games where – oh, we didn't realize like two levels in, everything just completely falls apart.
Yeah. There's no one to write to or call to fix it.
No, nobody really cares about Congo, the Saturn.
Why isn't
working.
Independence Day working?
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say for as much as I emulate things, PS1 emulation can be kind of touch and go at times. There is a much better – do you guys use a PSXE or PSX Final?
Yeah.
Use PSX Final. It's a much better one. But I think if Sony released a little box, they could figure out emulation. I mean they already kind of do it.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if the demand is there. I don't know if
the rights are there.
The rights might not be there. I mean Sony doesn't really own a lot of their own like software, I guess.
Yeah. I love that. If you go back and look at a PlayStation commercial, PlayStation this Christmas, Lara Croft, Crash Bandicoot walk out as if they somehow represent Sony,
which they
did for a hot second.
Yeah, all the things you associate with Sony are not owned by Sony, really. Yeah. PlayStation. Yeah. So I guess there would need to be demand and there would need to be an agreement, but I don't see this happening anytime soon.
Because I think Nintendo let their copyright lapse on either the design of the NES or the guts inside it.
I think you mean the trademark?
The trademark. I have no idea what I mean.
Patents, the patent expired.
But patents expire. That's just what happens. That's how God intended it.
That's why you can buy USB controllers of the NES and SNES One. I use those all the time. They're great.
So eventually anybody will be able to make one.
Conceivably, yeah.
At least just the guts.
At least like the actual like shell and everything in it. So
the little thing that used to be in your PS3.
Yep. So Jonathan says, I know it's a hard topic to talk about, but will you guys talk about the Famicom clones that came out of China and Eastern Europe / Russia during the late 80s and 90s? Seems like such a weird topic to discuss, even if there's so little information about them.
Yes, the Nintendo Vlad.
It plays all five
series. The Dendy.
Superior in every way.
These things were vital for mall kiosks, I will say that.
Oh, my God,
without them, they would not exist, so I think that they're a good thing.
When I worked at Software Etc. in the early 2000s, there was one of those kiosks like 20 feet away, and I was like, why is nobody stopping this?
Yeah, those things were the Galapagos of clone consoles.
Yeah.
Like they just thrived there, and it was an ecosystem, and they evolved, and they migrated and reproduced. It was amazing.
They were huge, and it took Nintendo too long to respond. Like it took them at least 5 or 6 years after I started seeing them to actually have their own we're not even talking about NES Classic. We're talking about like things like Virtual Console, a way for people to play these games. NES Classic arrived like 20 years too late in terms of competing with these things. But I have never played them. I think the history is so like black market and not recorded that I don't know what you would talk about really.
Yeah, I think the letter is asking not so much about the things that we saw here in the U.S., but actually how those survived and thrived in, you know, Taiwan, in Russia, in China. Because, you know, into the 90s and beyond, Russian kids played Dendy, which was their Russian Famicom clone. That's what game systems were called. Like kids here said Nintendos, Russian kids said Dendy. So it was kind of how video games thrived there for a long time. I know, like these off-brand Nintendo Famicom clones, but I can't speak as an expert to any of that. I just know that it was a thriving scene, and you know, people are constantly finding these weird new versions of the NES that they never knew existed. And there are some websites that kind of chronicle some of those. But, you know, it's there's no like official documentation. There's no official system. It's all, you know, it's black market. So
and
it's
these
all
– it's better in every way.
these still exist too. A friend of mine lives in Hong Kong, and last time I visited her – or she visited me in America, she brought back a Famicom clone, a handheld one with a bunch of weird shit on it. A lot of legit games, but a lot of like, what the hell is this? Yeah, and I have it. I should have brought it with me here. But
my buddy from Brazil was saying something similar that due to a lot of Brazilian tax laws, like if you're not going to build a company and a factory in the country, you don't get to make stuff. So older stuff stays relevant longer, so you can be walking around a nice metropolitan area of Brazil and that's just Mega Man X hawking cell phones. Like, he's that recognizable still.
God, so weird. So next letter comes from Seth, who says, I came of age in the 32-bit era. My first system was the PS1 and the Traveler's Tales A Bug's Life game. We were just talking about this game. It might have come up on Laser Time or VG Apocalypse. It's, like, Brett was talking about how much this game sold.
Yes, and Toys R Us.
Yeah, it's the greatest hit.
And that it's – if you have a PSP, a Vita, a PS3, and a PS4, you have access to Activision's Bug's Life. It has been preserved for all time.
Thank God.
How the hell did that happen?
God, yeah. The perfect time for that game, I guess. Yeah, Brett said he worked at Toys R Us for like 5 years. He never stopped selling that game his entire tenure. So going on with Seth, he says, the release of the SNES Classic made me think about the hypothetical N64 Classic, but the games of that era, particularly in the visual and control departments, haven't aged as well as their 8 and 16-bit counterparts. How do you see nostalgia of the N64, PS1, Saturn era re-entering the market? Will we see more total remasters like Crash Bandicoot, or do you think it's worth to try and emulate these games as they were, warts and all?
I think if you like that new Crash Bandicoot game, it's because it's a lot more than a remaster.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of fine-tuning there. I think what I'm seeing with some games, they're not doing it with a lot of games, but we just talked about the Final Fantasy IX release on PS4, the Final Fantasy VII re-release on PS4 and Steam. They're doing as much as they can to these games to make them presentable to erase issues that were related to the old hardware and that are not on the new hardware. But I think these games require a lot more cleanup, a lot more options to make them accessible to people who did not grow up in this era.
Yeah, the low resolution and lack of filtering and lack of proper perspective correction on PlayStation made those games sometimes just turn into these indecipherable mass of pixels just shimmering around.
Everything is made out of a waterbed.
It's really – yeah, it's really hard to go back to those games in some cases, not all. There's still some PlayStation games that hold up really well. But a lot of times you're like, what am I even looking at? And it was especially common with developers who tried really to push the bounds of artwork and create really detailed visuals. The system just didn't have the resolution. Like if you were to play the games upscaled, just the original models, you'd get a lot more detail. And the PS2 kind of did that with the texture filtering option for backward compatibility, and it made a lot of games like, oh, this went from being like indecipherable to kind of nice.
Like Vagrant Story?
Vagrant Story was fine as it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, like there were definitely Klonoa was one. Like Klonoa, the sprites.
Someone just
I couldn't figure out what the sprites were supposed to be in Klonoa, but then they added the texture filtering on PS2 and I was like, oh, now I see what everything was supposed to
be. Somebody posted a picture of Auto Modelista, like upsampled, and like, this
is
the most gorgeous game you've ever seen.
That was GameCube and PS2.
No.
I think it was just PS2.
It was pretty sure it was GameCube also.
But it was that era.
Yeah. So it was a later generation.
Yeah. But still, yeah.
Up-resed. Like a mofo. I'm trying – what was the question?
the nostalgia from this from that era, do you think it will age as well? How will people interface with it?
Well, the only thing that you were blessed with if you grew up in that era – and I say blessed – if you had a – most everything during that era got like 5 sequels and it's still going. Like everything I can think of I played on the PS1, I played a modern version of.
Yeah.
So it's just – strange to go back to like Tony Hawk 1, Final Fantasy 7. Like I have no interest in doing that.
I do think if there is an N64 classic, it'll be way fewer games, like maybe 10 at most, because for one thing, they're longer games.
Yeah.
But also like that you've got to find 10 games that you can learn pretty quickly. And I think the Rare Replay, I think that showcased like a bunch of N64 games, and I think like maybe one or two of them are like – still playable.
Yeah, really. Nintendo didn't make that many games for the N64 compared to their output on other systems. I think they just spent so much time on Mario and Ocarina of Time
They'd have to make the Mini without Banjo-Kazooie, Blast Corps, Jet Force Gemini.
They lost all of their Rare support, so that'd be a hard sell. I mean, as someone like me who looks at these old games, this is not the mass market consumer attitude, but I like looking at them to see like the shortcuts they had to take to make a conceivable 3D world. Like, oh, this element is 2D, or they made this thing made out of more polygons and this out of less. I like seeing the actual artistry that went behind the creation of these graphics.
Whatever Tomba is.
Tomba is actually 2D, so that has aged well. But I think – I don't know if I said this before, but I think the RPGs do age the best because they're not dependent on things moving fast. They're slower pace.
Frame rates,
yes. Although Final Fantasy IX, thank God they fixed a lot of the problems with that game and it's much more playable now. But I do want to see more of this era of games come back, but I don't know what form it will take, and I think people just would rather remake them than show us these ugly 3D games.
But there are a lot of sprite-based gems from that period.
Oh, yeah.
That came out of Japan. I've got to call our buddy Greg, see if he'll stream more with us, because we were trying to play Mad Panic Coaster, one of the most insane games I've ever almost gotten good at.
That is a
runs
weird...
runs at 60 frames a second for some reason.
A weird wild game.
Beautiful.
Greg says, what are some key features you like to see added to a retro game when it is re-released? There's always a fine line between preserving the feel of the original game while also making it more palatable to a modern audience. Save states, I'm assuming, are a given, but what else? Do you like releases that offer the option of old graphics and new graphics? What else?
Rewind,
yes. I actually prefer that to save states.
Me too.
It's more of a – there's less chance of you fucking up and making a save state in the wrong place if you constantly can rewind. And is Disney Adventures, Disney Afternoon Collection rather, is that the only retail release with that rewind function in it?
No. Rare Replay has it. I think Mega Man Legacy has it.
So Legacy does have it, right?
I thought it did.
Okay,
I don't think the first one does.
The first one doesn't.
And the second
one
doesn't. It doesn't even have save states.
Second one doesn't have save states?
Or maybe it does have save states, but there's like some features missing. It's kind of weird.
That's a bummer.
I mean, I think when it comes to RPGs, I know these are just – they're kind of just ports of the PC version, but what Square did with 7 and 9, Final Fantasy, like that you can basically fast forward through that game is pretty
great. It's like a frame skip button.
You can turn off encounters. You can like always give – with 7, I know there's like a button just like, oh, you get healed up and you have all your limit breaks. It's like, well –
The win button.
A win button, but at least I can experience the story of this if I hadn't before.
I do say save states are a given. What actually bummed me out about the first version of Virtual Console was save states were like the honor system. It was more like a bookmark. It's like this save state is good once.
Yeah.
You can use it once and then you're screwed. I'm glad the Wii U embraced the more unethical version of save stating. I'll go back to this as many times as I want to.
I don't know if – Did you say yours?
What's that?
What's your must in a retro release collection?
Oh, configurable controls.
That's good too.
A wealth of display options because some people want game
pixel
graphics stretched all the way out to an HD screen, and it's terrible.
It's
but
unfathomable.
Some people want that. Okay, but I don't. Don't force it on me.
Yeah. Mega Man games let you do that? Fill your entire 16:9 screen.
I think they give
that's
you a
crime.
Mild. They used to give you the other collections would give you a mild widescreen option, but it's not recommended.
I mean, the Wii U Virtual Console when it had DS games.
It did allow you.
It did let you do a lot of stuff with them.
All of them are bad.
Yeah. No option works.
This NES Classic Mini is just like, no. You can't make this widescreen.
Yeah.
You're not allowed.
I called that out in my review, and people are like, but I want to do that. I'm mm-hmm. like, well, you probably like snuff porn too. I don't want to know about that.
I'm sure I think I would like to zoom in a little bit at certain points, but like I couldn't believe Nintendo's like, no, as they appeared, that's all you get.
I think on a hardware level, your TV can do that. You can tell your TV to zoom in on the image if you have a good enough TV. Actually, I had a crappy TV before I got my new one, and it even let me choose, like, how do you want to view this image you're looking at right now? Do you want it cropped or 16 by 9 or whatever? But yeah, I like that. It's cool if there is new art on a game. I like what they did with the Monster World game, whatever one that is. I forget which one. Dragon's Trap.
Dragon's Trap.
Yeah. The re-release of that is that game. With the push of a button, you can go between art styles. And the Monkey Island remakes did that as well.
Sorry.
That is the one game where the flipping between art styles makes a difference. It's really weird, but the added animation makes it easier to pick up cues and gives you a better sense of control over your movement because it has a very like –
Oh, in Monster World.
Yeah. Yep. It has a very sort of fixed jump arc and I find it really hard to control myself in the original version. And even though the graphical swap is exactly the same, like same tech and everything, same physics, it just feels different. It's really interesting. That's a great example of, you know, that little embellishment working in favor of the game.
Yeah. And I'm a big fan of art. I really love old ads. I love old flyers.
Oh, yeah,
I love old original art. The Disney Afternoon Collection, I don't know if – I hope Retronauts audience picked it up. There's something in there that I have literally never seen before, and I assure you I've seen almost everything there is to see about this game. The original art that was rejected by, I believe, Disney. You'll see it in the Disney Afternoon Collection. It's the DuckTales rejected cover art that looks like Mega Man, Famicom.
Yeah, it's got the Keiji Inafune style. Yeah,
it looks totally.
Yeah,
consistent
I saw
with
that
Capcom's
when I was
art.
Flipping through that, and I was like, "This is amazing!"
It's the first time you've been able to see that, and it's not like something you put on the
characters
package.
Doing the Mega Man fingers.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Whenever I unlock a piece of production art in a new game, I'm like, "Why did you even tell me this? I will never look at this." But with retro re-releases, I'm like, "I want every box. I want every like concept art you can find. I want every piece of key art." You can dig up. I want all of that. So I'm on board with you guys.
I want your embarrassing 80s commercials. Please give me everything.
That was like – this is a retro release. That's a retro release. But on the PS2, there was Activision Anthology. And like this was like right before video on the internet was popular and there was YouTube to find these things. But I'm like, wow, there's a commercial for ice hockey with Phil Hartman. This is the most amazing thing.
You're right.
On the disc, yeah.
Wow, he's on a PlayStation disc for the first time since Blasto.
Yeah, Blasto was not a good note to go out on. Look forward to our Blasto episode when we run out of ideas. So here is our last question, the final question of this episode of Retronauts, the listener mail episode for 2017. It's from Justin and he says, do you think there are currently any released video games that will have an impact 100 years from now? Which ones and why? I'm sure there will be a year 2100 Chris Kohler that goes back to play all of the 90s Square titles, but will the majority of gamers have any idea of what games were like today or even back in the 80s? Will they even care? Are we doing this all for nothing? Are people going to know about us in the future, Jeremy?
Nope. We're all dying in the mass die out.
We're all dust in the wind, right? Is that how it works? I just have a feeling that no matter what –
there's a mass extinction event coming soon, so it doesn't matter.
That's right. There will be no future. But how do you feel about how games will age? I mean, I assume the way we interact with games will be different in 100 years, but – will these things just be in a museum as a curiosity? Like,
well, yes.
We look at like old machinery and things like that.
But in a PSVR helmet, that's what we'll be using 100 years in the future.
Will we still have controllers?
Yeah, we'll be staring into a PlayStation Eye camera that's sold separately.
I see.
It's part of the future.
Can it read our minds is what I want to know.
I think that we've kind of reached a point where technology and media haven't stagnated, but they don't advance like they did in their formative days.
It does like eating its own ass quite a bit.
Sure. So, you still read books from 300 years ago. Mm-hmm. You read Moby Dick or whatever, and it's still, aside from the parts about whaling that you don't care about, it's still, totally readable.
Mm-hmm.
We listen to albums from 50 years ago. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band is still a great record. I imagine people are still going to be listening to Sgt. Pepper's 50 years from now.
I wake up every day, listen to my Sousa.
Yeah, I don't see why people wouldn't still have some way of playing Super Mario Brothers or Minecraft or something 100 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think it's totally feasible and reasonable that we're not going to reach some sort of have some sort of massive leap forward in technology that's going to render every form of media that exists right now.
Executive order, I'm taking away the internet.
Oh, no,
emulation is illegal.
He's going to look into my ROM download history. I'm going to be at the Hague soon, everybody.
It makes me smile and feel really good inside. I love pop culture and I love things being preserved, and it's October here. And I like that when you look at famous Halloween monsters, you're looking at books from the 19th century made into movies in the 20th century, almost forgotten as pop culture characters now, but popular for over a century. And now it's October when we're recording, and they're just going to parade them all out. They're synonymous with the genre of scary. And I think I like the idea of Sonic and Mario and Mega Man as like the Wolfman, Dracula, and Frankenstein of the entire gaming medium. They might not have games. Their companies might not exist, but they could.
Mega Man's not going to be there. It's going to be Steve. Steve from Minecraft.
That's right. His name is Steve. Yeah, yeah. I feel like Mario will be like the mascot for the
medium.
Yeah,
he's Mickey Mouse.
He really is. Yeah. No child has seen a Mickey Mouse cartoon, but they can recognize Mickey Mouse.
Actually, and there's a Mickey Mouse TV series running now.
I meant a real Mickey Mouse cartoon, not like the Count All the
Mickey's
Shapes
Road
cartoon.
Roadsters?
No, okay.
Never mind. Go watch Runaway Brain. It's the best Mickey cartoon that Disney will not show you. Because
it's on Laser Time's Facebook page until Disney finds it.
Now they will. Great. Now I'm accessory to this horrible crime. Oh, do you have something to say?
Just that Roy Disney is one of our favorite listeners.
Oh, thank you, Roy.
Sponsor. Thanks, Roy. Michael Eisner, go fuck off. So, yes, this has been the last question for this listener mail episode. Thank you so much for writing in. I got everybody's letters. I'm pretty sure if I missed yours, I'm sorry, but I still love you. So to wrap up, I am Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. Of course, Retronauts is sponsored by Patreon. Everybody who gives this podcast pays for everything we do, the equipment, renting the space, renting storage at the space, having people come in, giving us their time. We appreciate everything you give to us. And if you want to give to us and you don't give to us, one of the incentives is for $3 a month, you can get every episode a week ahead of time and ad-free and at a higher bit rate. That's a great deal. That's a great deal. I think so. And if you give to us, we can do even more great stuff in the future. So please go to patreon.com/retronauts. There are more ways to give than that. There are more dollar amounts to give than that if you want to get other neat things. So please check us out. Even a dollar a month would be amazing. That's a great little tip to say, good job, guys. So Jeremy, where can we find you?
You can find me at retronauts.com doing Retronauts things. I'm very retronauty. And of course, I'm on Twitter as GameSpite and on YouTube on my channel, Jeremy Parrish. Check that out. It's really tough to find. Doing videos about Game Boy and NES and Super NES and so on and so forth.
And Dave.
I'm at Dave Rudden on Twitter, and I do a whole ton of work at Laser Time. Yes, but one thing I want to point out particularly that we do at Laser Time, which is in relation to a question that was submitted on Retronauts.com. Jason X, this was a question for Henry, but Henry's not on the episode, but he asks, if Henry's on the episode, the fans are dying to know, was the Montreal screw job a work? Which means this is a wrestling thing a controversy in 1997. So I'm going to say just pick up 302010. In 1 month, we're going to be talking about the 20th anniversary of this thing in wrestling, where a wrestler who was on the way leaving WWE had his title taken away with him without him knowing in the middle of a match.
It was the Montreal Screwjob.
Okay,
famous moment. Yes. Chris, how about you?
Laser Time. LaserTimePodcast.com is where you can find all our shows, our videos. I think we streamed at least 5 games we talked about on the show.
Yes.
Mad Panic Coaster.
Now's the time.
Including the entirety of the SNES Classic.
Oh, and you know, here's something I did that was really unpopular. Little mini documentaries for all the games in the Disney Afternoon Collection.
Those are great, yeah.
And almost nobody watched them, so big bummer there. But hey, if you like those games, then you can check those out. And we do a show, Laser Time. It's topic-based. I believe this being October, we're going to have a lot of Halloween-flavored stuff, including a brand new show, a seasonal show, An Elm Street Nightmare, where my friend Lizzie Cuevas and I will go through every single Nightmare on Elm Street film in order and do a wonderful little podcast.
It's great. I love it.
Kind of like what Bob and Henry and I do with Talking Simpsons, we're doing with Friday the 13th. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, Nightmare on Elm Street. Friday the 13th is a game we keep streaming. Yes. That's really good.
Bart, do you want to see my chainsaw on Hockey Massacre?
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. We'll see you then.
and caller number 9 for $1 million. Rita, complete this quote. Life is like a box of...
chocolates.
Rita, you're cutting out. We need your answer.
Life is like a box of chocolates.
Oh, sorry. That's not what we were looking for. On to caller number 10.
Bad network got you glitched out of luck? Switch to Boost Mobile, super reliable, super fast nationwide network, and get four lines, each with unlimited gigs for just $100 a month. Plus, get four free phones. Boost makes it easy to switch. Switching makes it easy to save.
The Mueller Report. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. President Trump was asked at the White House if Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation report should be released next week when he will be out of town.
I guess from what I understand, that will be totally up to the Attorney General.
Maine's Susan Collins says she would vote for a congressional resolution disapproving of President Trump's emergency declaration to build a border wall, becoming the first Republican senator to publicly back it. In New York, the wounded supervisor of a police detective killed by friendly fire was among the mourners attending his funeral. Detective Brian Simonson was killed as officers started shooting at a robbery suspect last week. Commissioner James O'Neill was among the speakers today at Simonson's funeral.
It's a tremendous weight to bear, knowing that your choices will directly affect the lives of others. The cops like Brian don't shy away from it. It's the very foundation of who they are and what they do.
The robbery suspect and a man police say acted as his lookout have been charged with murder. I'm Ed Donahue.